That's right, everybody. Don't let your mama into the room. Don't let your little sister in here. You just sit down, get ready for Kalina and Saylet. They're reading dirty books. Shh. We're reading dirty books.
Welcome. This is We're Reading Dirty Books, and I'm Kalina.
And this is Saylet. Today we have a very special guest with us. We're not going to do our typical podcast recording. This is a special one that we're going to bring out to you guys. And we have Roxanne Webster, who is a dear close friend of mine. And we wanted to bring on a strong, powerful, influential woman onto our show for our very first special guest. So we've got
And she'll be here later.
We just pull this woman off the street and said, hey.
We'll work for podcasts. Right.
So we're just going to get into this.
Dive right in.
And Rox, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Well, let's see. I have been around the sun 52 times. And boy, it's getting faster by the minute. I'm from Detroit, where the weak are killed and eaten. Came to Colorado in the late 90s, followed a dude, of course. Mm. That's how most of us come west.
Sure.
Followed some guy, lived with him for 2 weeks and said, oh, the only thing that was ever any good between us was the sex. What are we talking about? Moving in with each other. Right? Yeah, whatever. So, I had just done 10 years of nonprofit work, and I ran political canvases and did, you know, ballot initiatives, and I really thought when I got done with that work that I was going to be really a valuable commodity to some HR department, because I mean I ran a canvas with 70 people, and I hired those people and trained them, and had to do negotiations with municipalities, with cop shops that didn't want people there. Mm-hmm. We had constitutional rights to be there, and gathering ballot initiatives and doing public hearings and maintaining a fleet of vehicles. And when I started shopping the world for jobs outside of that, everybody would look at my resume and say, I don't know what this is, but I bet you can sell shit.
You're hired.
So finally, you know, I sold some dental plans for a while, and then it dawned on me, if what the whole world thinks that I am best suited for doing is selling stuff, I should sell big stuff.
Yeah.
So I kind of fell into real estate through the back door, and it happened to be a great fit for me. I love real estate, and for some of the same reasons I love the nonprofit world, that, you know, you're helping somebody at a very profound and pivotal moment in their world. You mm-hmm. know, your home is where you have your dreams and suffer your losses and have successes and failures and stress eat and all the things
and
we do.
And podcasts.
And sex.
We're sitting.
And sex. And hopefully.
Better be.
It's to be hoped. Yeah. And a home is a really, it's really fundamental. So I happened almost by accident to fall into the perfect work for myself. So now I've been in real estate for 20 years and have a real estate team. And we do a lot of business, and I also am a business coach and a real estate educator. I train people in real estate and a musician. Woohoo!
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I have a little trio called the Sweet Spot Trio. Dwayne plays the double bass, I play the flute. And John Bertram, I call him the panty whisperer, because when he sings a ballad, you just hear the whisper of ladies' panties sliding down their legs. John, not a dry seat in the house.
Yes.
Right? And my husband says that I've got the voice of an angel and the mouth of a sailor. That's about right.
So true.
It's so true. It's so true.
So true.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, our experiences with you, both Kalina and I mean, your team sold, or helped clean up by her house.
Yep.
I've bought plenty of houses with you and your team. You've saved us, you know, Daniel and I, from so many different mistakes. And now, I don't know if you guys know from our bios, my husband and I are investments are in real estate. So we work with Roxanne and her team. So, you know, this is good stuff.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when I look at you and Daniel, it's... you know, to see you guys go from young people having done nothing wrong, which, like one out of seven American homeowners in the 2008 to 2010 region, and where you guys were at rock bottom financially, that and to see you in this short 10 years get to the point where you've got, you are well on your way to having a completely retirable passive income by the time you're 40.
Mm-hmm.
If I had any influence in that, that's what I do this for.
Yeah.
It's good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's, you were the first person I thought of for this. I mean, a big influential person that we can bring onto the show that is, you know, a woman and is a leader and is strong. I mean, I've got, you know, my mom and stuff, but I'm not going to sit here with my mom with broken English and talking about sex. It just doesn't seem right. So, you know.
It seems wrong.
Right? You know? So, I mean.
So wrong, so right.
Rux and I have been through a lot together. She's taught me a lot about self-confidence. She's taught me how to use tampons. She's taught me having sex.
She has
done all sorts of different things with me, and I've learned a lot from her. So we really, really thank you for coming on our show.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm glad to be here. Yeah. What fun.
So the first question I think we're going to ask you is, what kind of books do you like to read, and do you read romance novels?
Do I read romance novels? Well, I'm not sure. I'm probably going to date myself. I have read what I would consider to be romance novels. I've read, like, Clan of the Cave Bear. You probably haven't even heard of that.
No.
It's like, that book came out when smoke signals were still, before smoke signals had been replaced with the cell phone.
Yep.
You know, that was a book that about... the first half of the first book, and as a young woman, when I'm reading that, I'm thinking, oh, this is feminism. And it's not feminism. It was, you know, by the time the lead character has invented fire and caused the next evolutionary jump in the Homo sapiens and whatever, and of course run into some Adonis that she... At some point, I surrendered to the fact that this was just plain romance novel, right?
This is a cookie cutter we follow every recording.
Every week. Yes. That's right. That's what it was. Right? Yeah. I could call it something else, but that isn't what it is. And The Thornbirds, which it's possible I've read 10, 12 times when I was young. I read it over and over and over again. And you know me, when I read a book, at some point or another, that book is usually read in the bathtub, and which means the reading at some point or another is going to dissolve into a nap.
Yep.
At which point the book falls onto my moist breasts and starts absorbing moisture and swelling.
Mm-hmm.
So really the genre is not as important really as the binding. It's got to have a strong bind. Not so strong, because, you know, we don't want chafing. but there again, so I'm not sure if you'd call those romance novels, but I like, I read a lot of business books, of course, but I love fiction, and I like books with an interesting point of view.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite book growing up was To Kill a Mockingbird. I thought to address those issues through the eyes of an 8-year-old was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, especially as a child, it helped to bridge a gap between childhood thought and very, very adult social issues.
Mm-hmm.
I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, to have that book told through the eyes of an insane person, who is slowly being drawn out of his insanity throughout the course of the book. Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, if you haven't read it, I say recently, 15 years, 20 years, whatever. I just found, by the way, my first copy of it The Poisonwood Bible. You got to read this. Kingsolver. Barbara Kingsolver. And that's a great book. It's about, it's told through the point of view, each chapter, from a wife and four daughters, ages 5 through 17, of a Baptist missionary in the Congo in the early 60s, which was about the time that the CIA helped to create a coup and, you know, very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I love it. Just so I like really interesting points of view.
Great.
So I'm not sure if any of those are romance novels. Probably not. I like chick flicks.
Sure.
But like not too chick flicky. You get to Under the Tuscan Sun way too much. That's like, bring on the syrup. Gag me with a spoon. Right. My type of chick flick is Last of the Mohicans.
Right.
Right? Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got really all that happens in that movie is run, 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 kiss, 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 run, fight, run, longing glance, run, fight, kiss, kiss, longing glance. But the music is good. Swelling string.
That's awesome. It's funny that you bring up the Poisonwood Bible because I think you might have lent me one of your copies. Because I know you've had multiple copies.
Yes.
And the copy that I do have, I think you probably dropped in the water
I'm sure.
A billion times because it is completely wrinkled. It doesn't even close anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I've had it for years. So
that's wonderful.
So you probably have like two other copies at home.
I've got
one of them. So.
I just read another one that I really liked. This was, this is not fiction. God, what's his name? It's called Tattoos on the Heart. And this is a Catholic priest who has run a church for gang members in L.A. for 25 years.
Wow.
And that was really good.
Okay.
Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So those are the type of books I read.
That's awesome. I know I'm having flashbacks as you're going through these stories because I can remember when I was 16 when I first met you. Yeah. I was junior in high school.
Junior in high school. You were dating one of the sons of former lovers that I finished raising. Mm-hmm. There have been two throughout the years. Jules, who's just a goofball.
Yeah.
What a sweetheart.
He is.
He's such a sweetie.
He is.
And just
that's exactly what it was. Nothing. I mean, he was sweet, and he held a good piece of my heart there for a while, and still a good person. But yeah, no, I remember just like, you know, walking. It was such an opening of self-awareness when I met you, because never in my life, in my home or anywhere else, would I have ever thought that it would be okay to just be.
Yeah.
It was such a, like, a faux pas to me, or it's like a taboo to, like, walk in on you while you were using the bathroom or while you were taking a shower or taking a bath. You never showered. You always take a bath.
I take a bath.
You slept naked and you were, you know, always watching a movie. I would crawl into bed with you while you were watching a movie, and I would watch a movie with you. And you would pull the TV into the bathtub. You would be in the tub for hours.
I would.
Hours and hours. And it would either be, most of the time it would be a book. Occasionally it would be a movie, I remember. Yeah. Yeah, that's good times.
Yeah,
I remember that. But it was a really big awakening for me too. I mean, you really taught me that it was okay to just be. Like, fuck it. Like, obviously you still have to live right by yourself and right by, you know, the goodness of humanity and stuff like that. But you taught me never to be afraid. And I remember when you used to give me compliments and tell me I was beautiful and smart and all this stuff. And that, you know, I played the flute too. I was a flautist.
That's right.
Once, a long time ago. And you taught me how to do all of that. And you taught me self-confidence. So I, you know.
I remember when you disclosed to me that you had a fantasy of being a bass player.
I did.
Right.
I did. I have a bass.
And
I don't know how to play.
For those of you who haven't met Saylet, she's like 5 foot nothing?
4 foot, yes, 5 foot nothing, 4 foot 11.
4 foot 11, but who's counting, right? And back when I first knew you, now your give a shit factor has significantly dropped, but you used to wear these platform everythings.
Oh, yes.
You even had platform slippers. Anything to try to gain half a foot on what was the standard issue in your height department.
I sure did.
So I had this vision of, you know, this sassy little Cambodian woman, your hair was different colors, with a low slung bass, and platform, like knee-high or thigh-high pretty lady boots. And I said, that is going to be hot. Right? I remember thinking, if I were a lesbian, that would be it, right?
That's it right there. I was close. I mean, I was pretty much all of that except for the bass part because I never learned how to play. But I've got one in the garage.
We should just take pictures. I know. Right. It'll be like all that exercise equipment people get.
Yeah. Good times. Good times. So, yeah, it's... I think that it was really important to share those life lessons and to give that message to women and to young women in general, young people in general, I should say, that it's okay to be you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not saying, you know, walk around outside naked, that's illegal.
I walk around inside naked. Well, yeah. It's possible I walk around outside naked. I take a liberal view. I think if somebody sees me naked in my own backyard, it's trespassing. Yeah. Probably illegal, certainly eccentric.
Oh my god. Yep, good shit.
In fact, in that house, I remember it was my first house I ever owned. It was in Southeast Denver, and it had a huge backyard with a lot of really overgrown bushes. Mm-hmm. It was private back there.
Yeah.
So I could walk. I could, in the morning, in fact, at 6 a.m, my dogs were both fence jumpers, and I had a big dog run out, you know, and the gate to the dog run was, you know, 20 feet from my back door. So literally I'd get up in the morning and I would hold one of their collars in each hand and I'd walk them out to the dog run naked every morning, put them away. Well, one day my neighbor, he, you know, like a neighbor does, told me he was going to pop the top on his house and dig a walkout basement and that they were going to need to bring a huge backhoe, you know, the big ones. And that would mean taking down that fence and a tree on that corner and some bushes. He said, do you mind if I do that? I'll replace them, of course, once we're done. And I said, sure, no problem. I'm a good neighbor. And, you know, I've got a little give a shit factor in anything. Right. So then... I'm very careful for several weeks because I'm expecting, you know, there to be workmen. And it took them months and months and months and months to get the permitting and the plans drawn, by which time I had long since resumed my habits of early morning naked promenade to the dog pen. And one day out I come and stop. There's like 30 workmen right there. I don't have a fence. All the trees are gone. Right, and I'm standing there with my dogs, Clan of the Cave Bear, naked with the puppies. Yes. And I like quickly double on myself and back into the house. And then I told my neighbors that, hey, I'm the reason your folks are here on time. Right? I like waved, hi guys, right, or whatever.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Nobody arrested me, thank God.
That's great.
Well, back in the nonprofit years, I, part of running a nonprofit political canvas, the organization that I worked for, we would cross-train. So if somebody was just starting an office or somebody needed some training in something specific, you would either go to their office for 3 or 6 weeks or they would come to yours. And when I was in... So the long and the short of it was for almost 10 years, I constantly had strangers living in my home with me. Mm-hmm. And after I got out of that business, I vowed that I was never again going to live in an environment where I couldn't walk naked around my house.
Right.
And everybody I know has been the sufferer of that early trauma. And ever since.
I think I took a, I don't know, maybe I have, I did not suffer from it. I mean, Dan and I, we sleep naked. Yeah. And that's nothing sexual. It's just what's comfortable.
Yeah.
And he has a big influence on that too, because he just doesn't like to wear the clothes at, you know, and it's a lot difficult now, but we've got 4-year-old twins that are running around. So we have to be conscious about that. But to experience that when I first met you, when I was just a teenager, it was so different. And it wasn't that I was disgusted or like, what the fuck is happening here? I was so intrigued by your confidence. And I was just like, yes, that's what I want to be like.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I used to be real shy.
Yeah, I know.
No, I can't stop fucking talking. Like, I just keep talking all the time. I've got stories all the time. I'm just, I mean.
My father used to say, get out of the spotlight. I smell burning ham.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, I've heard a couple of people say different things. Like, as you get older, you get more confident. And I've also heard people say, well, it's not confidence, it's just not giving a shit anymore. I mean, I guess it's both.
I think it's both. I don't know, I'm sure you see this now that you're a parent, mm-hmm. right? I remember when Dwayne and I were courting, and he had an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I was expressing some concern over whether or not I'd be a good parent.
Sure.
And he said, you know, if you fuck it up 50% of the time, you're doing pretty good. Right? And if so you true. Come into it knowing that, barring the occasional psychopath, right? Mm-hmm. Every person does the best that they can do with the tools at their disposal at the moment that they're using them. Mm-hmm. That said, we all come into adulthood with whatever hang-ups or programming was given to us by somebody with maybe a different sensibility than we would have or want for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of getting older and aging is really coming to a place that is of your design rather than somebody else's design.
Right.
Yeah. Woo, that was me sneezing. Thank you. Thank you. So a woman goes to the doctor because every time she sneezes, she has an orgasm. The doctor says, what are you taking for that? She says, pepper. I love that joke. I tell that joke to waiters in a nice restaurant when they first come and they got the pepper mill lying on their forearm, and I'll tell them the joke before they offer me the pepper. That way they still got to offer me the pepper. That's awesome. It's harassment, straight up. Straight up harassment. Somewhere there's some poor little waiter saying, me too, on Facebook.
Made me do it. She wanted pepper.
It's right, she pepper. Yeah. So, I think that there's confidence and there's life experience, and I don't think it always has to go that way. Mm-hmm. I think that there are some people who their heyday is high school, and then everything is just a slow waning from there. I think that, I was always an oddball in school. Mm-hmm. So, really unpopular. Nobody liked me in school. Deeply unpopular. Once in junior high, I went to my gym locker and found a bag of used tampons.
Oh my God.
Right. And that spoke to a concerted effort of multiple women to leave something like that in my locker.
Those bitches.
They got... And you know they're... nobody likes them now, and everybody loves me. That's they right. love me.
Listening to this right now.
That's
like,
right, they're listening, going, I'm not doing a podcast. I'm Skeletor doing Pilates on the back porch. I don't know where my husband is.
Right. That took a turn.
it did take a turn. Well, you know, if you start talking about the tampon joke, it all goes left. But then I was just looking at quotes today. Audrey Hepburn. And you guys know her, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, huh?
Gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
One of the most beautiful women ever. Yep. My mother looked just like her.
I've seen her pictures when she was... Yep, yeah, I remember. Yeah. Yep.
And here's a quote from Audrey Hepburn. You can even say that I hated myself at certain periods. I was too fat or maybe too tall or maybe just too plain ugly. You can say my definiteness stems from the underlying feelings of insecurity and inferiority. I couldn't conquer these feelings by acting indecisive. I found the only way to get the better of them was by adopting a forceful, concentrated drive. And isn't it awareness that arguably one of the most beautiful women of all times, mm-hmm. successful actress, mm-hmm. superstar in her day, famous philanthropist, humanitarian, and she is hounded by insecurities her mm-hmm. life. It's like I read somewhere that Mother Teresa said that for the last 20 years of her life, she didn't feel God's presence. In fact, she had become more of an agnostic. She wasn't sure that God was even there.
Interesting.
And the idea that she would continue with the life that she had mm-hmm. and the philanthropy, with that doubt, 20 years of belief with no confirmation, man, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
What have I been doing with my time? I got a paper cut on my dog once.
Well, I mean, who could live up to Mother Teresa,
you're
right?
Right. Yeah. You're right. That's a high bar.
It's not stretch. Okay. Maybe I should be going another direction. Mother Teresa. Oh, you know, my face would look cute with a little habit. So I got a little bit of that chin going.
That's awesome. So part of our discussion and our interview with you, we pulled some questions from Time Magazine that they have interviewed powerful women with, like Oprah.
Awesome.
So the first question is, what is the best and worst decision you've ever made?
Oh, that's a tough one. Best decision, I think, was to marry my husband. And that was a good one. I had avoided marriage. He and I didn't marry until I was 40. He was 52. Mm-hmm. And he had two great kids, an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old at the time. I think you asked me, how are things going with the kids? And I said, well, you know, fine. I think farts are funny and I've got a puppy. We're doing great.
yep.
And, you know, I've had a few close calls throughout the year, but I had never before been with somebody who really reveled in my power. I'm the type of person, if I go to a party, I flirt with anything with a pulse, and a pulse isn't even really necessary. Guys, girls, doorknobs, chipmunks. I tell jokes to everybody. I'm hanging off of everyone. To have somebody who that was amusing and it made him proud rather than feeling like I had to tamp myself down or pull back a little bit or mm-hmm. restrict myself in some way. Mm-hmm. That was really the first experience I'd had in a relationship of true unconditional acceptance from somebody.
Yeah.
And not just acceptance, but really, really enjoying that and being proud of it. Mm-hmm. So that clearly, and my life turned on a dime. I went from being a single woman living in a house by myself, reading non-romance novels, swelling on my breasts in a bathtub, to boom, moving to Boulder and having cows in my neighborhood. I'm from Detroit, you know. Cows. The little cows are so cute and they taste so good. And, I just found, oh God, this was funny. I just found a journal entry from those days that really cracked me up. Let me see if I can find this because you'll love it. I was talking about the high efficiency conversations that one has with Lily, my stepdaughter.
She's so great.
Isn't she? She's a great
kid. She's such a good kid.
She sure is. Good kid. She's third year nursing school. Can you believe that?
I know.
All right. So here's a journal entry. Around here, we have what I call the Lily high efficiency conversation. Here's an example. Lily, are you and my dad going to make a baby? Rox. We're thinking about it. Lily, if you do, what do you want? A boy or a girl? Rox. Doesn't matter to me. Healthy. Lily, if you have a girl, what will her name be? Me. Dunno. Lily, how come you don't have other children? Rox, I've been careful. Oops. Lily, how have you been careful? Rox, general discussion on the topic of birth control. Lily, yuck, why would you do it? Just for fun. Straight line there. Rox, because it's fun. Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that awesome?
I just picture that whole conversation happening.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
And it was kind of the perfect of all worlds. I love kids, but, these ones I got at the perfect age. No diapers. They can put thoughts together. You can have communication, and they've got senses of humor. And, you know, who doesn't love babies? Babies are nice, but, you know, ice cream is nice.
Babies and ice cream.
Once you can start talking to them, and it's very interesting. I was just channeling my Uncle Ed. I remember him saying exactly something like that about another one. So another family member years ago. But I think that was the best decision I made. Bad decisions or mistakes, you know, I don't view something as a mistake if you learn something from it, if you don't repeat it. Though, of course, we're all going to repeat mistakes for a while until we get it. Mm-hmm. And patterns are there for a reason. But, I think that if there are things in general that I am regretful for, it's more along the lines of undervaluing myself as a younger woman and the insecurities and some of the decisions that I made in my love life, certainly. Mm-hmm. I seem to have before getting married, I was a serial monogamist, 2-3-4 year relationships uh-huh. with kind, smart, good guys who had no interest in being in a committed relationship.
Right.
And clearly I was attracting that to myself because I felt that that's what I deserved.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. I think that there's always some of that. I remember when Dwayne and I met and we discovered that we had been in the same circles for years.
Mm.
We had played with a lot of the same musicians. We knew the same people, but we had never met.
Mm-hmm.
And for years. And Dwayne once said, God, if we had met sooner, these might have been our children.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Dwayne, if we had met sooner, I wouldn't have given you a second look because
mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready to be treated well by
right.
somebody.
Right.
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 So I'd say that bad decisions are around things like that,
mm-hmm.
Not valuing myself well enough. But then there again, I mean, who's to say? As I think that every experience that you have builds upon itself. I remember once hiking a mountain. It was a 13.5 mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And getting up to the top of it and doing the top of the mountain thing and eating lunch, top of the mountain, and pictures, top of the mountain, and then heading back down the mountain. And I went down the wrong ravine. It was mm-hmm. not the same ravine that I came up at. And it landed me 30 miles from my car.
Oof.
And at the top of the mountain, it was maybe a 2-inch shift in trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My toes pointed 2 inches off from where they came, sent me on a trajectory
yep.
in a whole different world that ended me 30. And I like my life. So who's to say that the decisions that I made earlier, I have to say they have landed me precisely where I am at this
mm-hmm.
moment. And
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't trade that. Yeah.
Right.
Doesn't that sound good? We should make
that
a poster.
Great. That was awesome.
That's amazing.
I'm getting teary eyed.
I know, I'm over here
surprised.
You were supposed to
take
to
the cave there.
It's like a kick. Let's get back to naked talk.
Naked talk, that's right.
So, okay. Those were great.
Awesome.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I think it's important because topics like that come up. A lot in the books that we read and we talk about them throughout some of our podcasts where, there's always, it seems like a lot of our female characters are struggling with issues of self-doubt and the decisions that they're making and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
it's important to see someone who's lived a life and made those decisions.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe some of them you don't know, but they led you to where you are today. And if this is, as awesome as it is, and that's what you were meant to do. So
that's exactly it. Yeah. And I think there's an interesting balance there. When we're young as women, we have youthful beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the harder body. You've got, your hair looks younger. Your skin looks younger. And I just see in myself, I hate to know this about myself, but I noticed years ago that I always am more physically affectionate with the younger dog I have than the older dog.
Oh. Hmm.
Right? And when I realize that, now I make sure to throw down some love on the older dog.
Yeah.
But it's like the younger dog, their hair is softer.
Right.
Yeah.
Their breath is better. Right?
Scotty.
Right?
Dying.
Look at Scotty.
Dog.
You gotta really work to love at that dog.
That's never going to die, so we
that's
have to
right.
love him forever.
You got it. I mean, and that's like loving on the mop that you forgot in the standing water for hours, right?
The
that's,
mop.
That,
yep.
That's what loving on Scotty is about. So you feel me on that.
Absolutely.
And so, I think that as younger women, we have a power that's based whether or not it's really based there, it's less experienced, it's less confident, and therefore it is an easier place to park yourself in your confidence coming from your sexuality, right? And as you get older and the tits fall and your hair gets a little bit more gray, thankfully, it's one of the few evidence that I personally have of God, is that your give a shit factor drops at about the same time your tits do. So so it doesn't bother you as much that's happening. But you're trading different insecurities, right? And, you know, when I ask myself, would I go back to 20? If I look at a picture of myself when I was 20 and I had that soft young hair and soft young skin and perkier tits and all of that. And holy crap, I wouldn't go back for any money, right? To be that insecure and to be, no.
Absolutely. I think that's a good segue to one of our next questions, and that is, what will be the biggest challenge for the generation of women behind you, do you feel?
I think that we're at a real turning point, right? The Me Too movement wouldn't have taken off if we had not had the last presidential election that we had.
Absolutely.
Right?
Agreed.
But it's not just that, right?
Right.
Because Donald Trump is... our country was ready for somebody like him to come into the social sphere, right? And that's evidenced by the Weinstein thing and, you know, all of what's happening in Hollywood. We're seeing evidence of what anybody with breasts has known forever.
Yep.
Right? That this is the world that we've lived in, but just it didn't make any sense to ever say anything about it.
Right. Yeah.
Right? I don't know a woman who hasn't at least been harassed, and probably 3 out of 4 that I know have been inappropriately touched all the way through to raped, right? You know, somewhere on that spectrum. It's just, it wasn't anything that talking about was going to make any difference for. And I think that that's going to provide some challenges for women stepping into places of power themselves, because harassment issues aren't, you know, they're not about sex and they're not about gender. No. They're about power.
Right. Yes.
So absolutely, as we start stepping into more powerful positions ourselves, do we take the lessons of this generation and the lessons of our sisters and our mothers and what being on the short end of abusive power has felt like for generations? Do we use that to inform civilized behavior or to engage in retaliatory behavior? Right?
Yes.
How do we wield our power? Because I think our power is great. And I used to really take pride at being able to make men blush.
Yeah.
But you can't make them blush anymore.
No.
They grow up. Then they get really old that you can make them blush again. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how we, what do we do with this? It's, I think it's going to be a mess for a while, right? And I think that there's going to be a lot of unintended, you know, friendly fire from this, right? The discussion needs to be had. The discussion of what it's more complicated than just who touched who.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember years ago when I was running a canvas. I think I was in Ohio, and you know, we were running one of these political canvases that goes out and, you know, the Greenpeace types knocks on the door, talks politics, asks for money. And I had this guy, he was really earnest, but just screwing the pooch out there. He couldn't raise money. He'd raise like 12 cents. And most people would raise 150, 200 bucks. He'd raise 12 cents. but he couldn't even get somebody to sign a petition to let's not beat baby seals to death. I mean, he was not connecting with people on some really fundamental level, right? And so I worked with him extensively. I went out and I did doors with him and I did role playing with him and the whole thing. And he finally goes out and has a good night, good solid night. And field manager comes in and tells me, yeah, he had a good night. And I go out and he's standing outside of my office, and I just took backhand and just kind of double tap on his belly and said, good job, as I walk by.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't in work the next day, the next day after that. He came in the next week with his girlfriend, shaking. I don't know who did what to this guy under the stairs in the Harry Potter room when he was 4,
right?
But he had viewed that as a sexual advance.
Oh, God.
Right?
No.
And nothing was further from my mind, right?
Right.
Yet in this current environment, if I had been a man, a woman who's using her power wrongly, or even had that misconception, that miscommunication, could have claimed that I was harassing him, right? Mm-hmm. And to take responsibility for that, that it really doesn't matter what my intention is.
Mm-hmm.
What is the effect?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of responsibility. But then there's always psychos, right?
Right.
So I think that we're going to be in a time of upheaval here where we decide what are the appropriate boundaries. You know, I've heard some news broadcasters saying, well, you know, it's just you should never go out for drinks with coworkers. Well, God, how the hell are you going to meet your mate if you're not? So there are lines here, right?
Right,
we meet people in our social activities, in our work activities. We have interests. There's biology. There's chemistry going on. We're seeking mates.
Yeah.
We find them. At which point, where is the line that says this is healthy interest?
Right.
Or this is inappropriate. So I think that women are going to need to take the lead on this discussion in a way that is gentle and feminine, right? We need to bring our womanhood to it.
And I think a big part of it is going to be learning to communicate again.
Yep.
I think that that's part that's been missing for a very long time. Men and women in offices haven't, or in any sphere, really haven't communicated on the same wavelengths.
Yeah.
And so we need to kind of find that place where we can communicate, because what women are experiencing is not the same thing that men are experiencing.
Well,
and that's what
true.
We're learning through a lot of this. Some of this is predatory behavior, and some of it is, like you just said,
genuine sexual interest.
Genuine sexual interest, or just misconstruing, you know, a tap with, you know, something else. And so creating that space where we can communicate and have the same verbal language. I just don't think I meant verbal language, but the same language.
Beautiful.
For, you know, these kind of topics is very important. And I think we've been missing that in our society for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that we're also at this technological crossroads,
right?
Where we are all seeking connection. How many hours a week do people spend on Facebook?
Right.
And yet that is one-way delayed interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're chatting with somebody back and forth, and even that, it's not, I mean, here we're looking at each other, we're engaging with one another, there's body language, there are all of our senses involved, there's movement, and technology, and the way that we're seeking social contact with people is disjointed and distorted. People go on and create profiles of themselves that are misleading. And there's enough of that. I mean, God, you think of all the people you dated and, you know, you married young, right? But as a young woman dating, it's like you ask yourself, who do I think he wants out of me? Let's try to be that gal for a while, right? Whatever.
Right.
And that's only amplified in social media.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
And I think that social media has just given people carte blanche to tap into their collective id.
Oh. Yes.
Anything goes. Oh, I just get to be as ugly as I want, you know? And you know, I was excited to come here tonight because you guys, I love the idea of having a show that we're talking about, you know, sexual issues and so forth. When I think it's so strange in our society that we're not allowed to talk about sex or death. But we are allowed to talk about religion.
Why not?
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like,
I think that's reversed, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I think that religion is...
That's personal.
Personal, and it's belief versus sex and death are...
Human.
Human and inevitable.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hope.
So does Kalina. that death is inevitable. Yes. She doesn't like the idea of immortality.
I hate immortality. So. And that's in a lot of our books, and it bothers me.
It bothers you? Why?
Real big.
I don't see the life being so... It has a purpose and it's has a value because of its shortness. Like, you should live to the fullest... Because it's finite. If it were infinite, what is the point?
Like, what are you doing on Tuesday?
Spaghetti again. What is the point? What are you doing? There's nothing there, like, that I see of value in forever living. And so a lot of our characters are immortal. And I'm just like, no.
I just watched the True Blood series for the first time, right? And yeah.
Boy, if I, you know, can you imagine bad hair days for eternity?
And those vampires particularly, like in a lot of other vampire series, like you are turned into something of beauty.
Right.
Those vampires, you're stuck in whatever form you're turned into a vampire in.
That's right.
So you don't get to change from, you know, what you were to something... whatever it is in the eyes of
there's
beauty.
No self-help books in the vampire world. That's what I'm getting.
Static.
You are static. Where you are, and you're stuck that way.
That's right.
If you were a virgin before, then you stay a virgin, even if you've had sex.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Oh, God.
You just lose your virginity all over again, which is just
what's
crazy.
Fun. Yeah. Let's go back and do that. But I also think, too, that another challenge that we're going to see as women... with this, and I've been thinking about this in my own world, is I think that anybody who has a traumatic experience, particularly something around sex, has to reframe that in their mind in order to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like kids who are abused sexually. They reframe it. They can't internalize that a trusted family friend would do this to them.
Right.
So rather than it being rape, it becomes, sitting on uncle whoever's lap,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
They reframe it, and that's a necessary survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But what it means is that in adulthood, unless they actively take measures to dial back up their emotional volume, they're living forever at that two that they had to dial back at
right.
for survival. And I think that there's a whole multiple generations of women that are now in a place where it is becoming acceptable to share these deeply personal stories, who are going to see their emotional range recalibrating or needing to recalibrate or having the potential to recalibrate,
mm-hmm.
which I think has the opportunity to push us into a renaissance of greater opportunity and greater enlightenment and greater sisterhood and greater leadership. So I think that I'm excited. I think it's going to be very tumultuous.
Yes. Yeah.
What is the Chinese proverb? May you live in interesting times.
It's definitely, I think, what's happening now is the interesting times, because you can't go through these kind of changes without it upheaving a lot socially.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to witness, because even just, you know, the societal view of what a certain things are, like, what is a successful business person? What is this? Like, you have a visual for what that is, and that's starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women are taking places that they haven't taken before and taking up space there.
Yet the rules still haven't caught up to it.
They haven't.
You know, I got this young woman who I'm coaching right now, and she's driven and sharp and smart, and she has a lot of the attributes that I have. And you know, I've always thought of myself as having more traditionally male attributes in business than female attributes,
mm-hmm.
right? And yet there's a double standard,
right?
When I've been talking with her about how to have a business discussion with somebody, it's like, you need to dial back your presentation, because a man would be considered assertive, driving, savvy. You're going to be perceived as strident, bitchy, and demanding.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that creates its own challenge, because if you're going to then present yourself differently than you are, aren't you just perpetuating the myth that a woman has to get what she wants through manipulation?
Right.
Pisses me off.
Yeah.
Chaps my butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, how do we change that narrative that a collaborative conversation is, you know, I just wrote a blog about women in music.
Mm-hmm.
only 2% of music producers are women.
Oh.
So, and the music producers are the ones who, it doesn't matter if you're a female artist, the producer is the one who creates the sound.
Right.
So there's almost no female influenced sound, even if it's a female artist.
Right.
In the world.
Yeah.
That's insane.
How would we even know if we like it?
Right.
Sure.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because we, as we were at the beginning stages of this podcast, that's exactly what the things that we were talking about was, you know, we're going to get out there and we're going to have our voices out there and we're going to have those haters and all those people that just don't like the way women sound when they talk in
right.
general. So we're trying to break those molds and break the way those walls and just the way people just look at us in general. It's just like, fuck it, get over yourself.
I read those articles all the time criticizing women radio hosts and podcasters for having, especially like vocal fry, the like back of the throat thing that women do. But there was a study that on par, men do it the exact same, like radio hosts and podcasters who are men do it the same percentage as women. They just never ever get called out for it. No one ever
what
emails.
What is it? Vocal fry? What
vocal
is it?
Fry. It's kind of like where you kind of swallow your words at the end. I don't know that I do it. I might. And I just, it's hard to describe. I had to look it up because I would hear about it a lot. It was a topic or it was a term that came up a lot. Women, because if you like follow podcasts, listen to podcasts, you'll see comments like, oh, so great, but her vocal fry is annoying and I can't listen to her.
Her vocal fry is annoying, I can't listen to it. Fine.
Basically, it's just saying, it's
you
another,
go listen to somebody else.
Yeah, it's another way of just saying she has an annoying voice.
That, right, right, right. She's a chick. She's got breasts.
So,
right.
But then
shut up.
A study came out and was like, across the board, almost the same percentage of men have that, you know, what they're complaining about. We can prove it in like the little, you know, voice like things that can, you know, track that, and they never get called out for it. So it's just another way of criticizing women that, you know, society has deemed it's okay, like, to criticize the way they look, to criticize the way they sound, to criticize the way they present themselves if they're in a business setting or in a political setting or,
well, and
know.
I think, too, that whereas, you know, boys' clubs are boys' clubs for a reason. You don't have as many women's clubs because women view each other as competition when we're younger.
Right.
And it feeds right into this. It's so much easier to tear down another woman to make yourself look better. So we're feeding into and perpetuating that ourselves as well.
And we address that too. We talk about that actually in our next.
We must be meeting in the cloud.
No,
you
just,
two are smart young ladies. You'll
you
go place to this podcast.
We have some characters in this book who are hating on other women that they haven't even ever met. And it's just like, dude, let's just all be nice
so
to each other.
So if in our own books we can create characters who are tearing apart like women characters who are tearing apart women, for nonsensical things. It's like that's in our own books.
It's like,
how are we
television
get out of this?
Channel Lifetime. I call it Lifetime television for stalkers. Every show, every movie on there is it's all the same movie. Victoria Principal's ex-husband is a cop who's an abuser and she's in hiding and he comes and finds her and that's the same plot over and over and over again.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's our, what we're trying to get out there. It's fucking everybody just be nice to each other and just let women be women and guys just
no matter what that entails for them.
Yeah,
you know, there isn't one type of woman.
No,
yeah.
There's not.
So vocal fry is your lowest registered, like the lowest tone of register in your voice.
Oh,
that's what the vocal fry is.
The vocal
the
fry.
The glottal, like whatever. Like it's
guttural.
I think
I think it's like a nasal thing, right? It's in the back.
Yeah, it's in like your.
Yeah, it's when you do that.
Excellent. I'm going to do the rest of this interview with vocal fry. That way we can start saying the real shit.
It's funny too because we always argue about whose voice is deeper and whose voice is higher. So I actually don't think we have it. I don't know. Maybe you guys could tell us if we do, but I don't feel like we do. I don't know.
I don't think anybody who says you've got vocal fry, they're a hater. They're a hater. I'm not buying it. I got my thumping shoes on. All
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we sound fine.
I think so too.
All right. Then that's all that matters.
Perfect.
I think maybe the episodes where we're like sick and have cough syrup or cough drops in our mouth. Maybe
that's
not
true.
When
you're
sounding
speaking
our best.
In Flemish.
Yeah. Oh, which we've done for sure.
That may not be our best.
Yeah.
Episodes.
No. Well, with that one of those episodes, my voice was real deep because I just recovered from a cold, so I had my sexy voice going. So we wanted to do something fun with you that we do in all that we started doing mid all of our episodes. I don't know, like whatever. We don't know anymore. And it's called Kiss and Tell.
Oh yeah.
So it's something that we do it's a topic that we bring, a question that we bring up and discuss it amongst each other, and it's usually a personal story. Actually, it is a personal story.
So, yeah.
It is a personal story that you tell about yourself. So you kiss and tell about this story. So the question that we have today is interesting because it actually made me, this question came from my experiences with you.
Oh, and awesome.
That is, nope, I don't have it written down.
Oh, okay. Is it the, have you ever been caught doing the sex or in a sex act?
Yeah, I was trying to be funny about that. Have you ever been caught having sex or in a sex act?
Have I ever been caught? I don't think I've ever been caught. I've come close.
Ninja.
I'm a ninja. Mm. Though God knows, I had one boyfriend. Do you remember Depressed Bill?
I don't. He wasn't Mountain Man, was he?
No, he wasn't.
Okay, Mountain Man. I don't remember.
Depressed Bill. This guy was OCD and like really depressed.
I might. I think I. Yeah.
Like you'd call this guy up. How you doing, Bill?
Bad.
Yes, I do remember.
Call the next day. Bill, how's it going? Bad. And then for a variety, I'm in a free fall here. Right, and this is at the beginning of the relationship. Honeymoon period, right? This is when he's trying to impress me. But we engaged in danger sex. Like,
danger sex?
In a park.
Ooh.
Right next to the path with him scoping one direction and me scoping the other direction.
Oh. Nice.
Or in a car downtown.
Okay.
Danger sex.
That yeah, is danger
that is
sex.
Danger sex.
Yeah. That's good.
it was good. It was delightful. I liked danger sex. Now, of course, I mean, I would have liked more of it, but he was just too depressed. In fact, I just quit smoking and I was using Nicorette gum, and Nicorette, the instructions tell you to take one of the little chiclets and put it in between your teeth and your gum and chew on it once a minute.
Oh, okay.
Which is horse shit. You are a junkie. Your drug is nicotine. You have a nicotine delivery chiclet in your mouth. And you're going to chew it once every minute? No way. So I found that, you know, if I just chewed on that thing, then by the end of the day, it would feel like I'd been given head to an elephant. Lockjaw. So what I did was I took the chiclets and I cut them into fours, and I chewed one to death. And then just, I constantly had one of these little quarter chiclets in my mouth. And it was really kind of gross. I'd get done chewing it, and I'm in serious nicotine withdrawal, so this is my only excuse for this caveman behavior. But then I'd take out this chiclet and throw it on my dashboard and grab another one and put it in.
Oh, so, God!
Mr. OCD, Depressed Bill, gets into my car. I pick him up. Right? And you know my car. It's disgusting at best of times. Mm-hmm. But now he gets into it. This is a guy who won't let me into his apartment because nobody's allowed in his apartment. It's like as good as it gets. Okay. Nobody's ever been in here! Right?
Oh, my God.
So I can't go into his apartment because he's OCD or CDO, which is in alphabetical order the way it should be. And he gets into my car, and there's 200 little teeny gumballs stuck to the dashboard. He goes, "What is that?" And it's like crawling up the back of his chair. And I explain, well, you know, I chew them to death, and then I throw them up there. When they get too disgusting, I scrape them off, and I reach to the back, and I've got like an ice scraper. And I say,
Oh, shit!
And he goes, "Too disgusting!"
Oh my God! That is awesome!
And that was the end of Danger Sex Bill.
Not again. No, can you imagine him trying to like get a boner thinking about all of those like...
Oh, the little...
spit wads. Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh my God, that's awesome.
That's my kiss so and tell. Awesome.
That's great. That's great. I have been caught by you, Rox.
It's possible.
It was once. I mean, I don't know if you can count being caught now with the boys. It's not like they've walked in on us in, like, full throes, but it's always just kind of like the teaser in the beginning where it's just, you know, the touching or the blowing or the whatever, and it's like you hide your face real quick and then you tell them to go back to bed.
Right.
You know, something like that. But you, full-on throw.
I walked right into the room. It was full thrust. You guys were full on. I walk into the door. I open the door. See you guys are bumping uglies. Oops, sorry. Pull the door shut. And then I hear behind the door, Saylet saying, "Oh, now I can't do it." And I open the door again and say, "Sure you can." And shut the door.
It was so awesome.
Yeah, that was classic.
Oh my god. Yes, I love telling that story too. That's a good story.
Oh, that's a good story. Yeah.
That's so funny. Kalina.
Awkward silence.
Not really. Nothing like that. Mostly because... No. Oh, shit, I forgot.
Okay.
We're river dancing.
A long, long time ago. And
in a galaxy far, far away.
And we were having sex, but we were kind of supposed to be watching his younger brother, who we thought was playing video games in another room. Oh. And he... came to the door, and I was like, it was a horrifying experience. Oh, and yeah, I suppressed that. How until old just was that? Recently. It's so funny. I want to say 11 or 12. Not like a child. Well, I guess that's pretty child. We were
that's old enough
17,
to
18.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we weren't like a ton older, but old enough that we probably shouldn't have been doing that while.
That's so funny.
Being technically in charge of a child.
I remember that story now. Did you bring it up?
I suppressed that. That
mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about that in a good 10-15 years.
Oh. I've got a story of almost getting caught. And this is the weirdest story ever.
Okay.
All I can say is that I'm a storyteller and the universe accommodates me. When I was 18, my boyfriend and I hitchhiked around the East Coast. So we actually hitchhiked from Michigan up to Niagara Falls and across into New York and then Maine. And our plan was to hitchhike up to the Maine and Montreal border and then hitchhike to the 401, which is a huge north-south vein, and then back down to Detroit again. And it was, you know, several weeks that we were doing this, and we'd never done anything like it. And my boyfriend was really tall, 6'6", and he had this face that looked like it had been hewn out of granite with a battle axe. He's Scottish. This long, straight hair. When you imagine Braveheart painted blue, running down. Screaming, playing the bagpipes.
Pretty much our main characters in all of our books.
All of them. Yeah. All of the main characters.
All of our books.
That's who Lee was.
Chiseled right? Body and face. Yeah.
Long hair.
Yeah.
Long hair.
All of our books.
That's who Lee. Wide shoulders, chiseled. Yep. Yeah. Gorgeous. So we're hitchhiking together. And we would, if the sun went down and we didn't have a ride, it was over. Nobody's going to pick us up. Mm-hmm. They would pick up a single woman, but not two of us. Right. So what we would do is usually if we couldn't get a ride by sundown, then we'd just walk into the weeds off the freeway and do the homeless thing. We'd pull out our tent and we wouldn't set it up so it couldn't be seen from the road, but we'd crawl into it with our sleeping bags and nobody need know better.
Sure.
Get up in the morning and resume. Well... until we got into Pennsylvania, where the Pennsylvania Turnpike had a 6-foot fence, like 10 feet from the road, as far as you could see with barbed wire at the top.
Uh-oh.
Whoa.
So, like, there's no way to do that. There's no off the road. And it's like, walk all night. And finally, I see this little pile of weeds that I said, okay, let me test this. I said, Lee, from the road, If I'm laying down here, can you see me? Because they were just thick enough. Okay, if we lay down right up against this fence, and we're just, nobody can see us. So, okay, this is what we do. So we go there and we get ourselves all set up and get it all situated and everything all kind of tucked away so that none of the reeds are, you know, so that it looks like the nice camouflage that it's supposed to be. And then one thing leads to another. And we start engaging in the nasty right there on the side of the road, 10 feet from the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
Oh, my God. Right? That's badass.
And then, I hear this sound through the fence that can't be more than 4 feet away from us. And the sound is like,
oh, my God.
And then you have a heart attack.
And then I have a heart attack. Oh, my God. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Oh,
and I'm like trying to squirm on my clothes. Oh, and I'm like, what is that? And then I hear the sound again, closer.
What the fuck?
And then that sound is like 6 inches away from me, just on the other side of this fence.
Oh, my God.
Again, that sound. And then no sooner am I'm completely freaked out. I'm almost ready to jump up and run into the freeway. And at just that moment, rear, cop cars descending from everywhere. A fucking helicopter. Lights. Looking clearly for whoever has been voyeuring my love nest on the side of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Yeah. Right? So, and literally cop cars, there's dozens of them, and they're like pulling up every 10 feet stop, and the lights like this, and Leah and I are like on the ground like this, and we're watching spotlights right over us while we're trying to skinny into our clothes. I'm thinking, how does this phone call go to my mother?
You know, public fornication on the side of a turnpike 10 feet from, you know, steel and metal dashing back.
Holy crap. And I'm going, I'm only 18, I'm going to jail. So we're skinny into our clothes, and literally I think there must have been 15 troopers stomping around. Helicopter, they never saw us.
Are you shitting?
What? And we are right there. I mean, there were probably 6 instances in that 2 hours where I could have reached out and touched a leg of a cop.
Oh my God.
And they never saw us.
So what
made the
noise? Did
you find what made the noise?
Have no idea.
Shut up.
No idea.
No, that freaked me out.
No idea. Freaked me out too. How's that for a story?
Wow.
Oh my God.
That's truly paranormal right there.
That is.
Real life paranormal.
Real life paranormal. I have no idea.
God.
Yeah,
that's
terrifying.
Did it sound like an animal or human?
No, it sounded like a human.
What the fuck?
Right. And clearly, somebody else was interested in that human, too.
Yeah.
Right? And that they didn't see us. They were clearly, we were in the midst of a manhunt. A manhunt. All within 30 feet of us. And we are lying. I mean, literally, when they first stopped, they're pouring out of the cars, these cops with shotguns, and the helicopters and the lights. We're naked on the side of the road, skinnying on our clothes, you know, with the light going over us. Oh, my God.
That is the best story ever. I don't think I've heard that one before. Oh,
man.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
How's that for a story?
I mean, like that. I mean, the cops and the lights and all of that, that's amazing. But to not ever find out what that noise.
To not ever find out what
and
it was.
And it was getting closer.
And it was getting closer.
It wasn't like it saw you and was like, oh, I gotta turn the other way. It got fucking closer.
It got closer.
Oh my God.
And closer, right? Oh yeah, God. Who knows? Who knows? That could have been. Who knows? I could have made a different decision and been chopped up in a pot somewhere.
No
right?
kidding.
Who knows? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sex in the middle of a manhunt. That's my kiss and tell.
That tops it.
Never tops.
You win.
Never. There's no story like that.
You win.
Oh my God.
Wow. Okay.
Gather yourself.
All right.
Well.
And now,
yeah.
Well, we can do a quick fun fucked fact, and then we're going to have you have the floor again, awesome. And then we'll close out. And...
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, from a website that I can't read because I can't read my own handwriting.
Awesome.
I think it says enkirelations.com, E-N-K-I, relations.com. The fun fucked fact of the episode is that masturbation is known to help cure depression.
Duh!
Right? Like, do we need to know this as a study? So, as the release
somebody fighting
of,
for tenure there, you know? We know we can ace this one.
Right.
Ah! The study's in! Eureka!
So, masturbation is known to help cure depression. As the release of emotions and hormones when you orgasm is reached, it puts your mind at ease and makes you feel more comfortable with your own body. So, people, we've talked about the EVA. We've talked about the...
We don't know when we're releasing this in relation to
we
that
haven't
episode.
Talked about the EVA. I'll take that out.
Take what that out.
Right, so, just an hey, occasional, orgasms yeah. and masturbations are good for you. Masturbations. Yeah.
You're feeling a little down.
Well, that's multiple. Multiple masturbation.
Yeah.
I am still creeped out by that noise. It's going to haunt me while I'm editing this.
That's fantastic. That's just very exciting.
So, yeah. That's awesome. So, we're going to take this time to give Rox the floor to talk about her, My Home Team.
Okay.
And feel free to say, promote yourself or whatever. We support you. You've helped us. And
yep.
So, we are absolutely... backing you up and would love to give you this advertisement.
Woo-hoo.
This promotion
well,
to our two listeners.
Awesome
to us.
Ta-da!
I've always been really genuine, and I'm not the realtor who's got a Jaguar and puts, you know, I've always been professional, but I'm also very genuine. And I know that I can be a little over the top and that I'm something of an acquired taste. And you're either going to like me a lot right off the bat, or you're not going to like me a lot right off the bat. So, what you see is what you get. But also, I've been doing this for a long time. And mm-hmm. I think that, especially these days, I think that real estate too is kind of at a turning point, as we've got this technological world mm-hmm. that's meeting an industry that's service-based. And it's very easy. I mean, it's hard to find where that balance is between the technology and the service. But ultimately, this is somebody's most significant asset. And it's a belly-to-belly sport. And sometimes it's about counseling, and sometimes it's about education, and sometimes it's about counseling somebody not to sell a house right now mm-hmm. or not to buy a house right now. And I've always taken that long view that I want to be a pivotal part of somebody's lifetime wealth team, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People who accumulate wealth need to have a good CPA. They need to have a good attorney, and I think they need to have a good realtor, and that's me. So
absolutely.
That's my plug. Woohoo!
Great. Yeah, you'll be able to find all of their links on this posting. So just go to our Facebook and our Twitter and,
yep. and look in the notes.
Yeah, look in the notes. Go to our website, dirtybooks.com, and mm-hmm. send us some emails. You do that. I can't. We've known I can't do that, so you do it.
Our email address is dirtybooks@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at dirtybooks. And on all of those, the has three H's.
Yes, and you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, all of the places you would find podcasts, and our website on WordPress, which is dirtybooks.com. So, again, thank you so much, Rox.
My pleasure. This was a lot of fun, ladies.
Yes,
yay!
Definitely. I think it was a success. Yes. So, we're super excited to get you on the air with us. So, come back and join us for whatever episode is next. And if you guys have any questions or comments or anything, or interested in Rox, give one of us a shout. Somehow.
We'll.
Yeah.
Anyway. We'll monitor.
So this is Saylet.
And this is Kalina.
And this is Roxanne.
Thank you for coming to We're Reading Dirty Books. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode for some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy and wonderful introduction.